intern for Larry King. I don't know if you remember Larry King, but he said there. He told me there is no such thing as a stupid question, only a stupid answer. So keep that in mind. All right, don't everyone hop to a mic here.
Can I have one of those mics?
Yes, you can have one. I'll just come down here. I'll fill out you.
I'm Darlene Austin. I live in this town. And recently, I was majorly ill. When I got out of the hospital, I had to have IV antibiotics for 11 days. To get them with my Medicare Part D tie-in was hundreds of dollars per dose. If I was willing to go to the hospital and have them, I could get them for nothing out of my pocket. Something isn't right. I'm a nurse, I could have given those things to myself, but instead I went to the hospital every day. I know you got a lot on your plate, but that needs to be added.
Well, thank you, Darlene. I'm sorry you're going through this, and didn't I see you at the Farm Bureau?
Yeah, we did.
Sure did. Thank you so much for coming to that. I don't have an answer for you, but we will look into it. I appreciate your comment. Real quick, until I want to tell one more story, and then we'll get to the question. Well, let's do the questions. I'll tell another story. What's your question, Dan?
Hi, I'm Heather Todd. I'm with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. I've been a volunteer since 2016, so I have a cancer question.
All right.
And a bill that we're working on, because we know that early detection of cancer leads to better cancer outcomes, which means fewer lives lost to the disease. But the lack of available screening for many types of cancer means that they go undetected or detected later when treatments are limited. So we need Congress to lay the groundwork for Medicare to cover these tests once they're approved by the FDA and shown to have clinical benefit so people can have affordable access to the most advanced early detection tests possible. Will you support H.R. 2407, which is the Multicare, Multi-Cancer Early Detection Screening Act?
H.R.
247, and I have a folder for you with it.
Yeah, please, I never commit to anything until I read
right.
it. I hope
yeah.
you understand that.
No, I do. I
would love to read that.
And Congressman Graves has already signed on to this bill, and almost all of the delegation has signed on last year. We just didn't get it out.
Awesome. Have you been to Washington? Have we met?
We have met, but I haven't been to Washington
okay.
in the past, but
you live from there, so.
We'll be there on September 19th.
Good. We'll come by our office.
We'll be scheduling appointments.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'll lean down. I don't know how to work this. First, I want to acknowledge you and say thank you for doing this. Like you had said, a lot of representatives don't do this at the state level, the federal level, or any other level. So thank you for doing this town hall. I think it means a lot to all of us. I wanted to ask you recently.
What's your name?
Rich.
Rich.
Yeah, right. And I live in Holden.
All right.
Visit Holden. Everyone go spend your money there, please. recently, you voted on H.R. 4366, and that's the Military Constructions and Veterans Affairs and Related Agency Appropriation Act. I think you had mentioned it's the only one that's passed so far. There's a section in there I wanted to ask you about and why it wasn't amended or even taken out. And the section reads, and I'm going to try to keep it short because there's legalese of the start of it, but it says, this shall be used in whole or part, that previous appropriations of funds shall not be used in whole or part to take any discriminatory action against a person, wholly or partially, on the basis that person speaks or acts in accordance with a sincerely held religious belief or moral conviction that marriage is or should be recognized as a union between one man and one woman. As I read that, I was hoping you could offer more clarity. That, from my understanding, allows VA employees to discriminate against people who don't have a man and woman marriage, and I don't think that that's right, considering our service members, regardless of color, creed, or sexual preference, should get service regardless. I wanted to see what your take on that was, why that wasn't removed, and why so many of your colleagues, and yourself included, voted on that and didn't take that out,
right.
or even added it to an appropriations bill.
I should have brought my notepad over here. Tell me that bill again, the number.
H.R. 4366. So it passed the House and waiting to go to the Senate.
Would you get that to Ryan right there, and I will take a look at that and give you an answer, answer on that. Next up. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon, everyone. So, I'm Patrick Clark. However, I am not here on behalf of White Air Force Base. I am here for myself. Just have to make that clear.
Good, we got that clear.
So, you said, get the DEI out and concentrate on being a soldier. And I don't understand what I mean. But basically, at this time, we are a diverse team right now.
Right.
And that's what gives us the edge against our enemies. So, if I'm asked to go to war with somebody that I'm divergent with, American, I don't know how you guys operate culturally, we operate differently. How do we go about doing that if we take the DEI out? Because the purpose is to unite us as one. So, to take it out is us going backwards, in my opinion. So, I just want some clarity on that.
Well, I appreciate your opinion on that. I truly believe that our strength as a nation is what we have in common. Our love for our country, our love for our flag, our love for our fellow man, our love for democracy and protecting that. So it's not about getting rid of diversity. It's about not concentrating on diversity. Instead, concentrating on what we have in common. I think for a lot of time, we have, as a nation, we have pointed out our differences. And that has led to almost a victimization mentality by some people, not yourself, that that someone is lesser than, or someone is oppressive, or an aggressor, or and we've gotten overly sensitized in America. And I think if we concentrated on the goodness of America and what we have in common as a nation, the things are worth fighting for and dying for, as you signed up to do, and God bless you for doing that. I think we would be better off as a nation. It's not about discounting anyone's race, ethnicity, socioeconomic background, but it's about your uniform and being uniform inside as well, not just on the outside. So thank you. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
My name is Chris Green, and I live in Dallas County.
How you doing? That's a righteous beard. I like that.
You got to put it all in one.
Alright.
Now, I listen to different news sources on YouTube, on my cell phone, all that, and like Newsmax, Forbes, and whatnot, and everything. And Joe Biden has come out and said that he wants to borrow more money for the COVID-19 variant and everything.
Right.
Now, there's also been a lot of talk about mass mandates on some college university and everything. College universities and whatnot, but I don't know which colleges are going to matter or anything. They would just say this in general. I think it was on Epic News where I heard it from.
Yeah. Let me tell you right now, COVID is over. The president said the pandemic's over. And he's not putting up with anything like that, anything like that. I expect from the very beginning the government should not be telling people what they inject in their bodies. Military personnel that have been let go wrongfully. We have fought that their records are clear now, that there's no, and I talked to Millie about this in SecDef Austin as well. We must make sure that there is nothing on a military record now that indicates that anyone was kicked out because they didn't take the jab.
Right.
I also want to get back paid on that.
Yes.
Constraints that we have, we don't have the money to do that right now. But I think we need to keep that on the front burner to make sure that our men and women who are unnecessarily and wrongfully kicked out of this very service that they signed up and promised to support the Constitution, we need to make that right. I was in a Bible study today in Kansas City, and one of the guys in it, his son is a pilot. He trains on fighter jets, and he got kicked out. And, you know, it changes lives. This whole COVID thing has been disturbing for several years now. And look, I know COVID's real. I truly believe that it came out of that lab in Wuhan and was manufactured. And I believe that Tony Fauci, unfortunately, has something to do with funding that. I think he needs to be brought into account on that. I think the National Institutes of Health and the World Health Organization were complicit in taking this vaccine that was unproven and shoving it in the bodies of Americans, and that was wrong. All right, who's next? We have roving microphones now. Oh, yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My name is Paul Lapp, U.S. Air Force retired.
Well, thank you for your service.
You're welcome. I live in Raymore. Three things for your consideration. During World War II, I believe, we had a department called the Secretary of War.
Right.
Now we have a war in the family. So I recommend we rename HHS to Secretary of the Family and set up a staff. Don't spend any extra money. Get everybody together, bipartisan, and orient our actions and our funding support to go after the family. Now, I understand that's controversial about legislating the family, okay? Up to this point, we've left it up to religious organizations and nonprofit and a whole bit, but it's obvious to me we got significant problems with the family.
Well, Paul, I agree with you in one regard. I don't know if we're going to change the name. Maybe get rid of the Department of Education and let it be the Department of Family. If we can't do that, my second option would be to first recognize that there is a war on our family in America. I think it's a battle of good and evil. I think there are certain forces in this world and in this country that want to take down the nuclear family. And since the LBJ administration and the new society that came about and making single mothers prominent and get really incentivizing single motherhood families, I think it's been a detriment to our society. I think you're seeing the repercussions of that.
Okay, number two.
Yes.
When I retired, I was fortunate to win a scholarship under President Reagan's Troops to Teacher program. Where is that program?
I don't know. President Reagan's Troops to Teacher program.
That's right. And I look around now, and I'm in the Raymore Peculiar School District. They're begging for teachers. All over, they're begging for teachers. And it's such a transition. We have so many well-educated personnel in the military, it would be a natural transition to put them in the classroom.
I will look into that, and under the House Armed Services, that's something maybe. I'm also on the subcommittee of military personnel, and then I'm also on another subcommittee that's quality of life that just started, and so maybe that's something we could look into reinstituting that again.
Okay, thank you, sir. Number three.
Number three.
I spent more than half my career overseas. And as you know, most countries, if not 90%, look up to America. And what I'm going after here is the budget. The $30 trillion budget deficit is absolutely killing us. It's hamstringing us in what we can do. So I pray for you that you have the courage, you have wisdom, and to stick to your guns to deal with that budget deficit and get it down.
Thank you. I agree with you, Paul. Let me tell you a little bit about what's going on in the last couple of months with that. You know that the President of the United States came in with his budget 2 months late. No other president has come in late except Joe Biden. It forced Kevin McCarthy into a position where we needed to negotiate fast before we ran out of time and ran out of money. We passed the Limit Save Grow Act, which would increase the deficit by $1.5 trillion over 1 year. would increase our military spending and would get rid of the 87,000 IRS agents who When Kevin McCarthy finally got into the White House to negotiate, and the president, I don't know if you know that, but he's not all there. And there were other people speaking for him in the room. And Kevin McCarthy finally said, look, I want to speak to the President of the United States. They finally negotiated the deal. When it was presented to me, after I voted for the Lend-Save-Grow Act, I thought it would get us into the presidential election year. We could use that as leverage in the election. And that $1.5 trillion, while it was more than what it should be, is what we needed at the time. When it came back, it was $4 trillion. And I said, no, I am not voting for that. Kevin McCarthy called me, tried to talk me into voting for it when the Speaker of the House called me. It was kind of a scary moment, but it was a 20-minute conversation. I said, Mr. Speaker, you told me, before I took this office, you said, don't surprise me on how you vote. Let me know ahead of time, and that's what I'm doing. And he also said, vote your conscience and vote your district.
Yes.
I spent $8,000 to poll 50,000 people in our district to confirm what I already knew to be true. But this was an important vote for me. And the people of this district said, do not vote for this, and I did not. Let's see. Oh, Carl Kramer with our Mesa Community Council. Is he here today? I don't see him. Carl's been wonderful helping at Pike and Air Force Base. There's a couple other people I forgot to mention, our caseworkers on our staff, and they're so important. Grace Townsend. Sir, could you sit down? I'm going to tell one quick story. I love telling stories. Grace Townsend, I hired her from Vicki Hartzer as well. She is a phenomenal caseworker. I think she's a veteran herself, and she just has a love for veterans issues. She's really tied into Fort Leonard Wood, and just a super nice person, a mom. She just had a baby 8 months ago named Harley. Grace, they told me I was going to go present a Purple Heart at Whiteman Air Force Base. I thought, well, that's pretty cool. I've never done that. Well, come to find out, I get there, and here's the backstory on this. If you follow me on Facebook, you've seen this story. A lady named Michelle Benz, who lives now on the base of Whiteman, she found out through some family records that had been passed down through the family that her grandfather, his name was Staff Sergeant Houlihan, was wounded in 1945 on Okinawa, Japan. And he was awarded the Purple Heart certificate, and he never got his Purple Heart. None of the family did anything about it. Michelle wanted to let her kids, his great-grandkids, know what he was all about and the sacrifices that he had made for our great nation. And so she and Grace worked on this for 3 months. Talking with the Department of Defense, talking with the Department of Army, you know, having to confirm that he never got this Purple Heart. Long story short, 2 weeks ago, they sent the Purple Heart to Grace at our office in Lebanon. And she set up this ceremony, and we got there, I think it was Monday. We get there, and there's a lieutenant colonel there. There's we're in the hangar where they keep the Black Hawk helicopters, and they had a huge ceremony that I got to be a part of. And just at the moment as we were giving Michelle the Purple Heart that her grandfather earned back in 1945 in the backgrounds of each cell phone taking off, it was the coolest moment of my 7 months in office. And that's just one of the things that we're able to do in our office. We saw problems with passport issues, people calling in saying, hey, I'm leaving for a trip, and I haven't got my passport. We can help you with that. We have veterans issues, benefits, anything that is federal related, we can help you with that. And if we can't find an answer, we're going to help you find someone who can. Our other two caseworkers, Michelle, who works in our... Michelle? She doesn't say much, but she sits back in that office and gets things done. It is incredible how many cases, almost 800 cases, we have solved since we've been in office. And we have helped return more than $100,000 to taxpayers at one of our agencies. Our other caseworker is Bailey, and he used to work for a competitor of mine, Taylor Burks, on his campaign. A smart young kid, and we hired him. I try to get the best talent from everywhere I can, and he works out of our Columbia office. Peyton runs our Columbia office, and she is the field rep for me there, and so I see her in Columbia a lot and the counties that surround that. Speaking of veterans, if you're a veteran here today, would you please stand so we can recognize you? Thank you. God bless you. KC-135s for many years, but I never served. And when I was in Fox 4, thinking, what am I going to do? I'm getting old. I'm not going to be on TV much longer. They won't let me tell the truth. So what am I going to do? This seat opened up. Vicki Artzer decided to run for U.S. Senate, and I really prayed about it a lot and got vice counsel. Leslie and I talked a lot. I really thought I need to do something for my country. I didn't want to be in a nursing home and look back and think, I wish I had done something to help my country. The final straw, though, is when Joe Biden abandoned our friends and allies in Afghanistan. Yep. And when he left 13 service members there to die on the wall in Kabul. And then when their bodies come home, he's checking his watch. I thought, that is it. I'm going to do something for my country. And so we never look back. I tell people, look, I don't know. This wasn't on my radar. I never thought I was going to get into politics whatsoever. And I don't know what God has in store for me. I take it day to day. I wake up every day and I think, it's a new day. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to say? Who do you want me to reach? How do you want me to touch people? How do you want me to serve people? And so that's the way that Leslie and I have approached this, with a servant mentality, because that's what the U.S. House of Representatives was set up to be. And we lost track of that. It wasn't a job to go there and stay the rest of your life. It wasn't a career. It was there for ordinary people like you and me, doctors and teachers and farmers, and to go there for a short time to represent, to be the voice for the people, and then to come back home. And so that's one reason I signed early on a pledge to support a constitutional amendment for term limits in the House. I think we're the team now, sadly, with Mitch McConnell. That's a tragedy. I feel bad for him. I feel bad for Joe Biden as a person.
It's embarrassing.
It is embarrassing to his family and to our country. And his weakness, and I'm sure our families have dealt with that. I've dealt with that in my family, cognitive decline. We need someone strong. We need someone strong behind that resolute desk who is going to make sure that Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping and the other bullies around this world know that we're the best country in the world and you're not going to mess with us. I sound like a preacher, don't I?
Amen.
What's your name, Ann?
I'm Cheryl Patterson. I'm Cheryl. From Warrensburg here. My husband's retired major in the Army, and I was a teacher with the Department of Defense Education System overseas. My concern is a broad overview. I'm concerned about a totalitarian government, about the steps we're on, little increments here, there, take a little bit here, take a little bit there. It's the frog in the hot water. that you don't realize where you're going. And I pray for your discernment every day.
Thank you.
That you, in your way, can influence other people, that we take steps to slow this. I'm a follower of history on a, you know, the thousands of years level. I know America's not going to be here forever, but I want it to be around for much longer than it is. And I think our freedoms are just slowly being eroded. I wish big government was out. I think it's tragic that you have to pass bills on what food stamps can pay for.
Right.
That shouldn't even be a thing. Government should be there for the big things. So I just pray that you can do what you can while you're there to stop that slow spread of Big Brother coming.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate your prayers. You know, our nation is in decline. I've seen it just in the time that I've been in my professional field as a reporter. You see it on the streets with the crime. These DAs and prosecutors are funded by George Soros that are letting people out of jail and kill others and rob our store like a swarm of locusts, and we're not doing anything about it. It's like a bad movie. And that's why it's up to each one of us in this room to stand up like you're doing and make your voice known that we're not going to put up with this. The louder that we can be with respect as much as possible, we can be a force for change. There is good and evil in this world, and the evil recognizes the inherent goodness of America. The providence and protection of our Almighty God that put us here and gave us a license, basically, to exist, and an experiment in democracy, a republic with no equal. And we've got to realize that we have something precious.
Yes.
We need to tell our children and grandchildren how precious it is and rekindle the spark of patriotism in America.
And I was a teacher for 20 years. I know it's not being taught.
It isn't. And that's a shame. Mm-hmm. We should put God back in the classrooms.
I read the last page. I know we eventually win.
We do in Revelation.
But in the meantime, for the sake of my grandchildren,
since you brought it up, some of you have heard this quote before, but I love Ronald Reagan, and I miss him. You know, back in the 80s, our country was divided as well. You remember the high interest rates that we had, 17, 18. You know, makes now look like a cakewalk, doesn't it? But Ronald Reagan, I think, recognized something 4 years ago that I think is very applicable, maybe more so today, when he recognized the division within our country, and he said, it's time for us to reassert our trust in God. It's time for us to realize that we need Him more than He needs us. It's time to turn to God for the healing of America. Now, I'm not pushing for a state religion. What I'm pushing for is for people of faith to take a stand, to be a voice, to stand firm, to not compromise, but be willing to listen to people and influence them into your way of thinking, to bring them alongside this idea that we do live in the greatest nation. It is worth dying for. It is worth protecting so that we can have many more generations to come. Jake, you have someone. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I missed you.
Representative Alford, I'd love to thank you for your daring jumping in the lion's den in Washington, D.C.
Oh, I thought you meant here.
Two, the military seems to be shrinking in numbers and size. I look at Google and all the bases I've been to, and there's fewer airplanes, there's fewer personnel. Some of the bases I look at are completely ghost or they're international airports now. And the other one is, we got to get more people in the military, and we all know that. But thank you very much for your service in that line.
Thank you so much. I wish I had brought this with me. I think next time I'm going to get graphics and do a graphic presentation. There's one slide that came from the Department of Defense. It's unclassified, but it shows the pacing threat of communist China. You're going to have to picture this in your mind. In 2025, the projected force of China versus the U.S. And on the left side of the screen, China is represented in red, and their ships and their submarines and their missiles and their satellites and their tanks and their personnel and their nuclear weapons take up two-thirds of the page. And on the right side is the U.S., and it looks measly. It takes up about an eighth of the page. It's scary. Under the Obama administration, they began to dismantle the military and pretty much let our assets go to pot. China is outbuilding us 20-1, I think is the number in ships right now. They've got it easy because they want to build something, they just make a ship to our building. We don't do it that way. It's funded through Congress, authorized and appropriated. It takes years to get something, a new platform, into existence. We're seeing that now. The new B-21 is being built in Palmdale, California. Have I talked about that at all? Well, that's classified. But that's a good try. I will say that on the B-21, I was able to go out there, and just an amazing thing. We are due to get the second wave of those. The Air Force Base in South Dakota, Ellsworth, is getting their first wave, and then we're getting the second wave, and then Dias in Texas is getting the third wave, and then they'll rotate those in. We've contracted, I think, for 145 of these, and they're about $600 million each. They are not a cheap plane, but it is unbelievable, the capabilities of this aircraft. I will tell you that. So anyway, that's the answer. I forgot where I was. Okay. Yes, sir. Oh, yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
My name is Judith.
Hi, Judith.
From Kingsville, Missouri.
Hi.
And I have two issues, and I'm going to try really hard not to get too emotional.
Okay, let me get my pen and paper here.
So you were talking about our securing our borders.
Right.
And I have the most diverse family that you could ever even look at. So it has nothing to do with diversity. But I am so aware of how many children are being trafficked into this country and how they're being sold into slavery or sexual slavery. And it's really appalling that our government is not doing anything about it. They talk about it, but they don't do anything about it. There was a case of one little girl, she was 8 years old, and by the time she got to where she was safe, she had 57 different DNAs inside of her uterus. And she had been molested so many times, it wasn't even count. They couldn't even count. And that's just one case. We have tens of thousands of children that are coming into this country illegally because they're being trafficked. They're being sold. The drugs cartels don't even worry about drugs anymore because they're trafficking children. They can make more money off of trafficking children than they can off of drugs.
Why aren't our borders closed?
So I'm asking you.
Just one second, please.
I'm just asking you, what can you do, and why isn't the government doing something about it?
Did you have another question, or do you want me to give
you? I'd like you to address that first.
I fully recognize that our border is not secure. Secretary Mayorkas is the biggest liar since the no.
I know.
And this constant denial, you know, this started before Trump was building the wall. We had an asylum system that semi-worked. It wasn't perfect, but people were having their asylum claims heard before they came to the United States. Even Obama sent people back. And so this president, sad to say, he was intent on, even before he took the oath of office on the Capitol steps, with a wink and a nod, he started welcoming people illegally into the United States. And with that, we got fentanyl. This manufactured in China. I just left a program on the steps of Pettus County Courthouse. Today is National Overdose Awareness Day. 107,000 people of our fellow citizens died last year from fentanyl poison that was brought in over this Mexican border, manufactured by China, and promulgated, I think, through the United States. That's wrong.
It is wrong.
But human sex trafficking, as you're talking about, and unfortunately, the Kansas City area being the intersection of I-70 and I-49, the heart of America, is the heart of human sex trafficking. And it is, I don't know if our government doesn't want to admit it because it is such a shameful thing. I don't know if it's complicit in some, I hope to God they're not. But you're right, we do need to do something. Did you know that right now, of the people who have been let in illegally, our government would say let in legally, but those who have come in, there are 85,000 children unaccounted for?
Yes, actually, to be honest with you, the height of the number is somewhere around 220,000. That's the children that have come across that they know of. But the ones that they don't know of, they can't keep those counted.
You know, I don't know what to tell you.
Is it possible to just bring it up just so that we can see what they have to say? I mean, I would like to see that being debated as to what, not at least acknowledge that it's happening. That you know, I don't know what your intention was for opening the borders, but this is what has happened, and now what are you going to do about it?
I agree with you. I will make you this promise. I don't know what I can do, but one of the first four speeches I'm going to do when I get back there, I get a minute every day that I want, I will do a speech on your behalf talking about this issue.
My second one is the elephant in the room.
Okay.
The elephant in the room is, we all know, I mean, even if you don't listen to the mainstream media, which never ever talks about it, but if you listen to Newsmax, if you listen to Real News and all of that, they tell you how many times and how much proof they have of Joe Biden and Hunter Biden taking bribes. They are continuing to get away with it time after time. It seems like they're going to investigate it, but then they don't. And we have the DOJ, who is not investigating. Now they're doing a special counsel, which means now you can't ask us certain questions because you have a special counsel. They did that on purpose. And so I'm wanting to find out how much further is this going to go without them actually having hearings and committees on these bribes that they have taken when he was a vice president. Now they've discovered 5,400 emails of different names that he had different email names so that he could hide all of it.
Yeah.
So what is being done? I mean, most of us wouldn't get away with one time, let alone with all the times that he's done. What's being done?
I refer to it as the Biden crime family.
And they are.
I think this is the most compromised president in American history.
And they are.
How do you get to be worth $8 million and have four homes when you're a public servant?
How to get away with all of the documents he had in his home that were unsecured and they were classified documents? How did he get away with that?
Well, let me tell you what's going on and a little bit of how this works. So as soon as we took power in Congress in early January, and even before that really, the formation of these committees started. So Judiciary, which is run by Jim Jordan, you know him, and then our Oversight Committee run by James Comer, both men of integrity, both Christians, and both trying to find the truth in all this. They have been digging and digging and digging. This is why you've seen these bank records that have come out now that have linked directly $20 million at a minimum in illegal payments that have come from oligarchs in Russia, Ukraine, and some from China, an adversarial nation that have gone to the Biden crime family. And so, as this is coming up, as they are interviewing more people, it does take time. I know the American people and you and I are frustrated. And that's why I pushed Kevin McCarthy last week when I talked to him. I said, we've got to have an impeachment inquiry when we get back.
And please make it where we can watch it.
It will be where you can watch it. I guarantee you that. Here's the difference, though, all right? Let's go back a couple of years when the Democrats had their knives out for Trump and impeached him twice, right? On stupid things that he should have never been impeached on. And yet the Democrats, because they were in power and they controlled the House and the Senate, they were able to do that. they didn't get a conviction of sin, so it was really controlling the house. But my point is that they made a mockery out of the impeachment process. We cannot, you know, I know that Republicans are always like the nice guys, but we've got to protect our republic. Yeah. And part of that protecting our republic is defending the Constitution. Yeah. And part of defending the Constitution is doing it the right way. Yeah. Congress has two big powers, to declare war and to impeach. And if we don't do it the right way, we're not going to get Democrats on board with us to see the truth and admit the truth and to convict in the Senate. And we're going to do a disservice to our future generations by continuing to make a mockery out of impeachment, sir. Now, we're going to have an impeachment inquiry. I'm 99% sure of that. But it may take a while to get it done. There's still new evidence that's coming out. Every day, they're interviewing someone new. They've subpoenaed the IRS agents, the investigators who've looked into this, and they're going to make them talk on Capitol Hill.
Well, they have whistleblowers from the IRS that have already come forward, yep. And they were threatened. They were threatened.
It goes very deep, and, you know, the scary part is somebody asked me, what happens when you get rid of Joe Biden? Well, it's like, you know, you get rid of Tweedledee, and you got Tweedledum as president. So I don't think it's going to be any better. But that's not my issue. That's not the issue of the House. The issue of the House is to secure America. And right now our nation is insecure, unsecure, because of a president who's compromised to the Russians and the Chinese. All right, let's go over here. Yes, sir. You
can have a long time. Major Randy Dalton, United States Marine Corps, retired.
Thank you for your service.
I have two questions. And one, for 2.5 years, I did not go to the VA because they required a mask, and I refused to wear one. Their talk is it's coming back. That's something I'd like for you to look into.
I would be fighting that tooth and nail. I've already thought about if they try to implement masks on planes, I'm going to walk to Washington. I am not going to wear another diaper on my face. It does no good.
I spent 2.5 years not going to VA because they required it. And like I said, the talk is they're getting ready to do it again, which means whatever treatment I need to get, in the near future, I won't be able to get because I will not walk in the building. That's one. The other one is the Federal Reserve System has never been fully audited. We know that. Why not? It's Congress's control of the purse string that controls that. Somebody needs to be asking that question. Thank you, Congressman.
Well, thank you very much. I totally agree with you. I'm not a big fan of the Federal Reserve. They have financial issues. They have their own budget, actually. And they are in financial trouble. They are laying off people. And the financial services, I think, has some oversight of that. And that's Lane Lutemeyer. I would pass that along to him. But yes, the Federal Reserve has extremely bad monetary policy. You cannot continue to print money and pump money into an economy and expect it to be hunky-dory. People start going wild with their money, overspending, and it drives up inflation, and that's where we are, where we are today.
Most people think the Federal Reserve belongs to the government.
It's not. It is a separate. The Federal Reserve banks are privately owned. So, who's next? Yes, ma'am.
You were talking about budget. Oh, sorry. Rachel Gifford, and I'm from Centerview, Missouri.
Hi.
I used to live in Kansas City, though. I miss it. But you were talking about the budget.
Uh-huh.
There are three things that I wanted to say about that. One, I understand that illegal aliens currently are getting
here's what's going to happen. We are going to try to strip things like that and get Mayorkas out of there.
Yes.
We're going to try. The Democrats will come back and fight it and say that we are trying to defund Border Patrol. You see, they have weird ways of doing things by lying and confusing the American people. But we have to make our case and stand strong. And I think that's going to be part of what I'm going to be doing in the next couple of weeks as we talk about these different appropriation factors. I know two of the big things we really need to get past for the American people are the Homeland Security. That's going to include our H.R. 2 border security bill that will start the reconstruction of the wall. Yeah. So Joe Biden had installed. Have you heard this? So all I've been down there two times, seen the border myself. It's worse than you can ever imagine. It's only a 12-hour drive here. Did you know that?
Yeah.
All right. So all this stuff that was laying there in piles that he refused to erect after he became president, he's now selling for pennies on the dollar. So that when we pass this law, there won't be anything to put up. I think that is indicative of his cowardice and in that failing, flailing, flatless leadership. The other part that we've got to pass in appropriations is our defense. We've got to fund our military. We've got to make sure our veterans are taken care of. All right?
The other two questions were, I wonder if we could not please get rid of General Orbit, the Department of Education. That's been in place actually since what, 1979? 76. And the bottom line is, it's gotten progressively more impinging on the schools ever since it started. Chop that son of a gun out of the budget. Chop it out.
I'm all for that. I have campaigned on that. I'm just taking that money and sending it to the states. So the states rightly can run the education system.
Well, I'm thinking of the parents. I'm thinking of parents who have children. And the third thing, I sort of hesitate to say this, but recently I went through the entire, I think it's 15 or 25 titles of HHS. And we were looking for a way to make it make sense, because this is the year, actually at the state level, that we can get changes made in HHS. The bottom line is HHS is a conglomeration of a whole bunch of different things that, number one, duplicate, and number two, are not honestly helpful. They continue to do the one-parent family thing that you were talking about. Can that somehow be stripped out, worked through, gotten rid of, dropkicked? I don't know what the right word is, but HHS is not helpful.
I'm a firm believer that we need to take a close look at every agency that is in existence now and determine, number one, are they needed? Number two, what level should we fund them? And number three, how do we effectively do oversight in these bureaucratic agencies that actually run the country? And I'll give you an example. So I told you before, I'm on the House Armed Services, Ag, and Small Business, all right? I've been in the Pentagon, not roaming around. It's very tight security there, even for a congressman. But I've gone there to talk with assistant secretaries and people in charge and talking about Ukraine and Russia and China, okay? We have oversight of the USDA, U.S. Department of Ag, which is just down the street from our office. It's, half a mile. I cannot get in that building. I have told them I want to come just to meet people. I want to see where they sit. I want to meet different people in different departments, and just, we have oversight. I'm not there to grasp it. I just want to see what goes on in the people. They won't let me in. How can they do that? Exactly. I'm also on the Small Business Committee, which we're over the Small Business Administration. The administrator, Ms. Guzman, refused to come testify before our committee. And we have oversight over her. She refused to come. And the issue was over $200 billion of your money that was stolen, cheated, frauded away from COVID relief money to the Small Business Administration. And she would not come testify as to what they are doing about that. When we get back, we have already drafted a bill with my name on it, and we're getting to the sponsors right now. I call it Cabo, because I love Cabo San Francisco. The Congressional Access to Bureaucratic Offices. And we are going to make sure that we can get in there anytime and see what people are doing. You know why they don't want you in the building? Because only 25% of the people are in the federal buildings right now. They're still operating on a COVID mindset, hoping that COVID comes back, or at least the government says it comes back, so they don't have to go to work. That's why the passports are backed up. That's why the benefits to veterans are backed up. That's why everything in the government is backed up like you know what.
Put in an audit into that bill as well. They all should be audited. Every one of those, the Federal Reserve, all of them should be audited.
I don't know if audits take place now, but I will take that under advisement as something that we should be doing. Yes, sir.
Yes, I apologize. I didn't know if you were going to ask.
No, that's fine.
So I definitely agree with you when you talk about funding the military and keeping all these healthy up. But something you said in the young man up there said earlier, so we have less troops now that just being said 90% of the nation is what we currently have. Mm-hmm. And what the Air Force now is calling it being a multi-capable airman, where they expect us to do more of its work for less. And when you say spend money on our assets to maintain the lethality, some of that money, you guys have a conversation with going back to the troops? Because
yes.
We are?
So yes, sir. I just helped, because I'm military personnel, helped the Fourth Amendment to give you a 5.2% pay raise. You deserve probably a 20% pay raise, but that's the best I can do right now, and we will work on getting you the pay you deserve. And I highly respect you for being willing to sacrifice to protect me and my children and future grandchildren if we ever have them.
Thank you. I do have one more question.
Yes.
So this is about, so in the beginning when you start talking about small businesses, so as it stands, there are programs in place that aid us in starting small businesses currently in the military, but you said that you're planning to do more, so could you elaborate more on what that
sure.
means?
Sure. So Taylor Burks, who was my competitor in the primary, he is a Naval Reserve officer, a warrant officer. He was also the Boone County clerk. Anyway, he came to testify a couple of months ago about some of the challenges that veterans have just on a communications basis with a small business. There may be programs in place, but veterans don't know about it. And why is that? And so our bill is going to really force the hand of the Small Business Administration to reach out proactively and let veterans know how they can help them. There may be some programs in place that are rusty, and we need to put some oil on them so they move. And that's what we're going to do.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. All right. We have someone on this side. Yes, ma'am. How are you doing?
Well, my questions have been answered, but I'm going to hammer you again on the border.
All right.
We travel on the interstates and even state Missouri highways, and we see the long white buses that we see on TV that are loaded with illegals. And we feel violated. We feel impotent. What can we do? And then we have to, when we go places, a lot of times we are confronted by people that we imagine, because they don't speak English. What can Americans do to get our border closed besides outright revolt?
On November 5th, 2024, in about 440 days, go to the polls, go early, and vote for a Republican for president. That is the only thing that is going to change this mess. And I am dead serious. We cannot, I know that's not like a cop-out answer, but we have tried to get Secretary Mayorkas to number one, tell the truth. I've ridden a lot of horses. I know the difference lied about that. He has lied about it not being a crisis. When you look at what's happening in New York City, a sanctuary city, good for them. You can have the illegal aliens up there staying at the Roosevelt Hotel that Leslie and I used to enjoy staying there, and now it's filled with illegal aliens who are spilling out on the street, and it's costing them $12 million, I think, a week to support the illegal aliens up there. The good thing about it, though, ma'am, is that the Democrat mayor, they've got now a war between the Democrats up there, because they realize, and with good intent, that the illegal aliens who are shipped up or busted up to other parts of the country needs to take a share of what Texas has been dealing with.
Right.
And now they're seeing the reality of this, that these decisions have consequences for the sovereignty of our precious nation and every taxpayer in here. You think healthcare is bad now, getting a doctor? You think our Medicare system is in trouble, Social Security system now? Just wait till these 7 million people are added to our rolls and added to our voting rolls, which is the end game for the Democrats. It's a power play. That's why they want these illegal aliens here, so they can turn them into Democrat voters by giving them everything under the Christmas tree.
Paper ballots.
Paper ballots. Any county clerks in the room who'd like to dispute that? All right. Anybody want to come help Callum? All right, did you have a follow-up, ma'am?
Yes, I do.
All right.
According to the news stations that we watch, this COVID that is supposedly coming, the government has already contracted out everything that they're going to need to fight the COVID strains. And so that's money that has been spent. Am I correct in understanding that?
I don't know how the money's appropriated and allotted with the Health and Human Services or what category that goes under. I know there's preparedness. And look, I was big on, we know that while this might not be a legitimate return of COVID, we had the Spanish flu in 1918, which wiped out a lot of people. The remnants of that are the flu that we now experience every year that there's variants for, that it's mutated over the years. The people now who are experiencing COVID, for the most people, it is no worse than a cold. And yet people are still getting tested for it. I'll tell you one thing suspicious about these reports and being a recovering reporter, it kind of stuck with me. You notice how they don't tell you the number of cases that have increased for a hospital. They tell you the percentage. Well, if it goes from 1 to 2, that's 100% increase. So ask for the numbers, not the percentage. Look, I don't think anyone in this room is a conspiracy theorist, all right? But I do know that government is about power and control.
Ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine should be legal.
Okay, noted on that. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I don't know enough about it. So I do know that, all right, who's next? We go over here. Yes, sir. How are you?
Good, sir.
What's your name?
My name is Oakley. I'm just a student here at UC.
Oh, good. What are you studying?
Political science.
Uh-oh, here it comes. My replacement. All right.
Once again, thank you for coming tonight, sir. There's been a lot of contention towards the current president.
Yes.
When are we going to start looking at other branches? When are we going to start looking at the kangaroo court we have right now with the judiciary?
Yeah.
When are we going to start looking at decisions and congressional impeachment power to impeach judges that are taking away abortion rights?
That's right.
They're trying to bring up, you know, marriage and right to privacy. They have free will. And they have control over the FISA court, which is one of the most secretive, unconstitutional, and just downright, un-American courts. They're spying on all of us, everyone in this room. I mean, raise your hand if you have TikTok. So
your contention is that we're not looking, I'm trying to understand where you're coming from.
We need to be also concentrating on judges that are involved in illegal activity or just bad decisions.
One, illegal activity, and two, overstepping. And in a weird way, some of the recent decisions have been actual, you know, them saying they don't have standing to make the decisions and then deferring to the states, which was the excuse they used to take away abortion rights from citizens. So what I'm necessarily more calling for is looking into agencies like the NSA, FBI, CIA that don't report directly to the president anymore,
right,
and the judges on the court are defending those unconstitutional
decisions. I will agree with you on one point. And this is very sad for America. We have lost trust and faith in some very important things in our society that make us tick. Number one, I was involved with 35 years in the media. The reliance on faith in the media is at an all-time low. Our justice system, we have a two-tier system of justice right now, which is unacceptable. We have a federal law enforcement system that a lot of Americans do not trust because of the political persecution of Donald Trump and others who they are going after because they do not agree with them and they are scared to death that they're going to get into power and they're going to uncover the underbelly of what's going on in our government. And so we have to make sure that, yes, the judges do their job. Their federal judges are appointed. There is a process through our Judiciary Committee to impeach them, and federal judges have been impeached. Alcee Hastings, back in the early 90s, was impeached, a federal judge. And then I think later became a congressman. But there are systems in place, and I implore if there's illegal activity, yes, that should be looked into. I don't think you can impeach a judge based on his or her decision necessarily, but if there's impropriety or something that can be proven, just like with any member of the executive branch, someone who perjures himself before Congress, I believe that's an impeachable offense, i.e. Secretary Mayorkas.
Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions? Did you have another one, sir? I want to say thank you for coming here, and reach out to our office if you need any help in your, if you want to come visit us in Washington. We may not be the same politically, but that doesn't matter to me. I want to help you however I can, okay?
Thank you, sir.
All right. Yes, ma'am. This is the president of the Student Government Association right here. Tell me your name again. Well, good to see you. We had a nice little chat before the meeting. How can I help you today?
And I kind of wanted to, elaborate a little bit about that. Obviously, you guys don't know, or now you know, I'm the student body president here at UCM, and me and Congressman here had talked a little bit about the fentanyl crisis and opioids and how it's really affecting young people, and I kind of shared with him my one of my ideas as student body president to enforce, Narcan training on campus and get things going like that so that we can, you know, save our young people on campus. And I know you talked a little bit about that when you were speaking earlier.
Sure.
Today, and I just wanted to have
Let me dig into that. And I appreciate you bringing that up. And I want to applaud you for your service, for running for office. It's not easy to put your name on a ballot, is it?
It is scary.
Because, you know why? Because people, you know, when I was on television for those years, I wanted everyone to like me and watch me. You know, here in politics, people are not going to like you. And you got to be okay with that. But you got to stick to your convictions and know that what you're doing is the right thing. And you represent this entire student body, and it's not about you. It's about them. And I applaud you for that. And thank you for your question. So fentanyl is a huge... Let's give a round of applause. Fentanyl poisoning is a crisis in America that, once again, I think this administration has not fully recognized and dealt with. I think Joe Biden actually said something about it today because it's Overdose Awareness Day. But that's the first I've heard of it from him. 2 months ago, I was in the Belton License Office in Cass County, and I was getting my license renewed. And the lady did the transaction after about 10 minutes. Our transaction was done. And she said, "Can I talk to you for a second?" And I thought, well, we've been talking for 10 minutes. She said, "No, I need to talk about something personal." And the office is full of people. And so I went, they still have a little plexiglass up there, which I hate that plexiglass. I think it does any good. But anyway, I guess it's like the salad bar thing. Anyway, so I go around the plexiglass where we can see eye to eye, and she starts crying. And she's telling me a story about her daughter who died from fentanyl poisoning 8 months prior. Just a tragic story. Her daughter was very involved in school, got caught up with some of the wrong people, and died from one pill. They killed her. And she wanted to do something with this grief. And I'm telling you, everyone was around listening, like the old EF Hutton commercial. And people were crying. I was crying. She was crying. And I got through that conversation. And I went back to our office, and Becky was there, and Patty. I said, we've got to do something. Brian, you were there, too. I said, what can we do? We came up with an idea of having a fentanyl forum. And Patty did a lot of the legwork, and Becky and Ryan to put this together. And we had 12 panelists there last month. Five family members who have recently lost loved ones to fentanyl poisoning. And we grieved together. They told their stories. We came to some realizations that I didn't know. Number one, the shame and guilt that's attached to this for the families. Because who wants their neighbors to know their kid died of fentanyl? Well, that means my kid's a drug addict. That doesn't mean that at all. That means your child may have asked for a Midol from someone and took it and died of fentanyl poisoning. Now, there's some people who are caught up in the drug culture that they do die of fentanyl poisoning. But there are others who that's not the case for them. So we've got to remove the shame and the guilt from that. 12 years ago, many of you remember Ron Harmon. He was one of my best friends, our weatherman. You weren't here at the time, but he took his own life. And at that time, we didn't talk about mental health issues. We didn't talk about suicide. And we came on the air, and we cried, and we grieved, and we talked about it. And because of that, we started our You Matter campaign at Fox Sport, and people started talking about mental health issues and why, you know, you can drive your car 100,000 miles, you gotta go get the oil change and the tire service, right? And the same way with your mental health. There's nothing wrong with getting help for mental health issues. And so that shame and guilt and stigma that was attached, the same thing is happening to fentanyl. We've got to remove that. I think one of the other things we learned is that Narcan is a very useful tool in this. Again, that's attached. If you have Narcan in your car or your home, you're not admitting that you're an addict or anyone else in your family. You're simply admitting that you have a tool that can save someone's life, just like the fire extinguisher that's hanging out the hallway. And so we're advocating for Narcan to be in public places. If you give it to someone who's not actually overdosing, you're not going to hurt them. It's basically like a saline solution to them. But one of the things we learned, that of the 1,574 people who died last year in Missouri from overdose, 63% of them died with someone by their side. Had that person had Narcan, that person might be alive today. That is a big number. We are taking this platform that Patty has crafted, and we are doing bipartisan fentanyl forums all over Missouri. Our state reps are doing it. We're doing one October 2nd with Emmanuel Cleaver at our church, Evangel Church, at 435 in Holmes. And we're going to have that place packed because it's hitting the urban core, it's hitting the 4th district, it's hitting the 8th district, the 7th, all the districts. We're going to plan one in Springfield, Columbia, Joplin, and St. Louis as well. If our president is not going to shut down the border and continue to allow fentanyl into our country that is killing our fellow citizens, then we have to stand up and do something. And this is what we're attempting to do. All right. I think we have time for a couple more questions. Yes, sir.
Hi, Congressman. My name is
Nice pleasure, by the way.
Thank you. I was hoping I'd
okay, good job.
My name is Jake Rosa. I'm a senior here at UCM. I'm also a member of our college Republicans group, so I'm glad to have you here.
You're happy to talk to you. All right. There's Carol back there. How you doing?
Good.
Good to see you.
I just wanted to join you in the praise of our, I think, our greatest Republican president, Ronald Reagan, great admirer of him. I wanted to hear a quote on the 40th anniversary of D-Day. Reagan said, "It is better to be here and ready to protect the peace than to take blind shelter across the sea and rushing to respond only after freedom is lost." Now, as somebody who shares in your values of wanting to protect democracy and help our allies and stand up to bullies across the world, would you then agree with me that the United States should continue to assist the people in Ukraine in their struggle against a bully who has consistently sought to extinguish freedom both in his own country and in his neighboring countries? Just as we plan to help Taiwan against Chinese authoritarianism, should we not seek to help the Ukrainians save themselves from unfounded Russian aggression?
Very good question, and I brought my editorial in the Hill. I encourage everyone to read that. It's also on my social media accounts. My basic argument in this is that we have given enough money for now. We need a clear strategy and transparency, and what is the end game? What does victory look like for Ukraine? Once that is established and once it's determined what we need to do, we can go from there. But the first step is, Joe Biden, spend the money that we gave you and then come back. Don't ask us for more money when you haven't spent the money we've given you. All right, our last question.
Hello, Congressman Alford. I am Tyler Ames. I'm a student here at UCM and a constituent from Camden County. I would like to preface this with the fact that while I don't agree much with all of your policies, I want to appreciate you coming out here today to talk and do town halls, and I think that is something that every local, state, and federal representative should do on their breaks and just all of the time.
Thank you. I understand.
My question today revolves around the ownerships of farms from foreign parties, specifically China, and the buying of farms from large corporations and billionaires taking away from the family farms that built America.
Yes.
The PASS Act, or H.R. 8274, is a bill that would like to seek to deny the purchase of farmland from foreign countries, such as China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran. I would like to ask your opinions on this matter, along with the possible idea of expanding it to large companies and billionaires that don't have the best interest of those families who built this state and this country with their farms, and just what is your opinion on that?
Do you come from a farm family?
I do not, but I have a lot of friends.
Yeah, that's a great question. We have been facing this for several years now, and it is getting worse. I am a firm believer that adversarial countries like communist China, Iran, Russia should not own any land in our country. I know Josh Hawley has a bill in the Senate that's similar to that. When we get back, we're going to be taking a close look. We've got to do something fast on this. As far as conglomerate farms or big farms, I do run into personal property and privacy rights on that. I don't want to be able to tell a farmer who has bought maybe his land or it's been handed down in the family, and now he's looking at retirement, and his family do not want to take over the farm, to tell him that he can't sell to a bigger company that wants to operate his farm. Now, I don't like what some of the big farms are doing. I don't like that Smithfield Farms is owned by the Chinese. I think that is wrong. One of the four or five big meat packers in America. Our food security is national security. But I'm concerned about farms in America, and I talked about this to the Farm Bureau, those who heard my speech before on that. We have 95,000 farms in the state of Missouri. Did you know that many?
I knew that it was a lot.
Yeah, second most farms in America behind Texas. We've got to protect our farms and the farming business. There are only 30% of Missourians under the age of 35 who are in farming. The average age of a farmer in Missouri right now is 58. Now, that's not old, but it's getting there. So how do we get people back on the farm or staying on the farm? I'm looking at two things when I get back into Congress. One is kind of duplicating this new state law that was just signed in by our governor Tuesday, I believe, Dan wants to sell his or her farm to a beginning farmer, they can not be taxed on that capital gains for up to $2 million, right? That's a great law. That's a state law. Let's do it federally. So I'm going to be talking to Jason Smith, Attorney General, to do a federal bill like that, that we can give a tax credit, a break at least, to those people wanting to invest in a young person wanting to get into farming. The second thing is, if you go into farming today and you're trying to get a loan and you're a beginning farmer, it's very hard to get a loan. I mean, it's hard to get a car loan without a cosign. But right now, the cap from the Farm Credit Services and others can get money and incentives from the federal government to give these loans to farmers. The cap on that is, I think, $660,000. You can't buy a farm for $660,000. So we are going to work through the Ag Committee to try to get that level raised to $2 million. We think that's a good level. So those are the two things I'm going to personally do to try to incentivize young people getting into farms. Our food security is national security. Thank you for your question. I'm going to close by talking about the Farm Bill. You have a question, Mike?
It's mostly a comment as you're carrying on what you're saying. Mm-hmm. As it stands now, just like when we started our farm years ago, these guaranteed government loans through FSA and those places, those are pretty great, those low-interest loans. Now, as suspect your small business legislation you're looking at is going to be the same way. What happens is those low interest rate loans are only open mostly to the people that can least pay them back. Because if you've done everything right, you've got good credit, you must be denied by two other legit higher interest rate institutions like conventional banks. So if you've done everything right, those are off the table for a beginning farmer or small business. So that seems like that's an inverted rewards program.
I did not know that. Mike and I are friends. Would you work with me on helping maybe make a better law in this advice or any more? No, seriously, I need that kind of help to get this right. Because we've got to incentivize people to get into farming before it's too late. I want to close with a story related to the Farm Bill. I talked about it a little bit. Very honored to be on the Ag Committee. Our chairman is G.T. Thompson. He's from Pennsylvania. Great guy. I think he got tired of me pestering him and being on the Farm Ag Committee. He finally got me on board. But once I was on board, I knew that he was having listening sessions all over the nation. In fact, I went to one at his state fair in Pennsylvania in February. It was an indoor fair. And I did that for a couple of reasons. I wanted to see, Pennsylvania is beautiful, and they have a farm fair that is pretty cool, not as good as our state fair. But I also wanted him to come to our state fair, because I think we have one of the best in the nation in Sedalia, every August. I think it's probably the best. So I bugged him and bugged him and bugged him, and he finally said yes. I worked with him every day on the floor. I said, GT, we're going to have a listening session at the state fair. And he finally said yes and got his staff on board. And for the first time, I think ever, we had a listening session at the state fair earlier this month. The governor was there, Lieutenant Governor Kehoe was there, G.T. Thompson was there, and several congress members that we brought who were also on the Ag Committee. One of those was Monica De La Cruz. She's from South Texas in the Harlingen area on the border with Mexico. And then a guy named Jonathan Jackson, who's a Democrat from the south side of Chicago. And I wanted him there because the Farm Bill is a bipartisan bill. It's a three-legged stool, and without these three legs, the stool will fall. Number one leg is protecting the farmers with the safety net programs that they need, the crop insurance, to be able to get the loans to buy their food, their fuel, the fertilizer that Joe Biden has jacked up to unreal levels right now. Without those loans, farmers can't do business. And without the crop insurance, they can't get the loans. The second leg of that still is the SNAP program, 81% of the Farm Bill this year. That's a lot of money. But keep in mind, the Supplemental Nutritional Program, we have raised the work requirements for that. We have gone from 49 to 54. They tried telling us, the Democrats did, you're going to make old people go hungry. And I'm saying 54 is not old. And you should be out at least looking for a job, have job training, volunteering 20 hours a week. There are provisions in there for people who are truly hungry, who are truly down on their luck, that to be fed, all right? That's not the issue. What's scaring people? But we've got to get nutrition back in the program, and we've got to get rid of the fraud, waste, and abuse of the SNAP program, and I'm working to do that. The third leg of that stool is conservation. There's no better conservator of the land, steward of God's creation, than the farmer and the producer. Without healthy soil and air and water, the farmer producer cannot produce the crops that they need to succeed and to make money, too, for their family. And so without those three legs, the Farm Bill will not survive. The Farm Bill is a bipartisan bill. The Democrats mainly, especially from places like Chicago, they're concerned about the SNAP program. But they need to know about the first leg of the stool, and that's you. The people in the 4th Congressional District are farming producers and ranchers. And so I invited Jonathan Jackson to come to Missouri. He's been to St. Louis, but he's never been to the heart of Missouri and the heart of America. And so this African-American man who's from the south side of Chicago stayed in my house. He came to the state fair, had a great time, milked a cow. I got a picture of him. He didn't know what to think when he touched that other one. He didn't know what the future farmers of America were. He had never seen a blue cord or a jacket like that. And he says, I want to get this program in Chicago. My point of telling you that is that, you know, we're divided in America between party lines and ideologies and cultural differences, but there's always room to talk and try to win someone over. This isn't a game of baseball where it's just a matter of strikes and balls, because the umpire, once they call you out, there's no changing their mind. I want to change the mind of people and influence them into my way of thinking, and what I think is the right way, in that capitalism is good, that socialism is bad, that we live in the greatest nation ever. And with hard work, determination, and helping each other, we can keep on being the greatest nation. Jonathan Jackson left here with a unique experience that he would never have had, and an appreciation for that first leg of the stool that I don't think a lot of people on the Ag Committee, on the Democrat side, have an understanding of. And he is going to tell them that side of the story. As Paul Harvey used to say, I want to tell you the rest of the story now. Jonathan Jackson is the son of Jesse Jackson, who ran for president in 1988. And he called his dad to my house because every night he puts his dad to bed, who's suffering from Parkinson's now. And, you know, I couldn't be more opposite in our political beliefs. But here's another human being that I was able to connect with to tell them about the greatness of Missouri and the greatness of our farmers. As we leave tonight, I want to encourage every one of us, let's quit screaming at each other. Let's start listening to one another. You don't have to agree with everyone, but let's start listening. I'm intent on doing that for as long as God and you, the voters, want me in this office. I will always listen. Thank you so much, and God bless you. I'd like to thank you guys.